opened its application service for applicants to update data a couple of days ago. On June 2nd, it will start processing completed applications and will thereby officially launch the medical school application cycle for the class of 2020. Wow, that just sounds so futuristic, 2020. At the same time, by the time this podcast is posted, we will have passed May 15th, which signifies the winding down of the 2019 class's application process. By this point in time, students are not supposed to hold more than one acceptance, and wait lists should start moving and shrinking as applicants make their decisions and schools solidify their classes. This is definitely not a ho-hum time for many, many medical school applicants, and I'm happy that we have a true expert here to join us today. Before I introduce our guest, I would like to remind you that I'm happy to answer your questions on the show. You can post your questions in comments at info.exhibit.com/103, which is the location of today's show notes, or you can email your questions to me at questions@exhibit.com. Now to our guest. I'm so happy to introduce Dr. Lena Mehta. Dr. Mehta seems to like Ohio. She grew up in Ohio. She earned her MD in a combined BS-MD program at Northeastern Ohio University's College of Medicine. She pursued her interest in radiology at Mount Sinai Medical Center in Cleveland and followed that up with a fellowship in nuclear medicine at Cleveland Clinic Foundation. She joined Case Western's faculty in 1999 as an assistant professor of radiology. And in 2004, Dr. Mehta joined the Office of Admissions and has served as Associate Dean for Admissions since July 2006. Next year is your 10-year anniversary. She also serves on the Department of Radiology's Residency Education and Selection Committees. Dr. Mehta, thanks for joining me today on Admission Straight Talk.
Thanks for having me, Linda. It's great to be here. And by the way, I'm a huge fan of Cleveland.
That's good. That's really good. All right. I'm delighted. Again, I'm delighted to chat with you today. Now, how did you get involved in med school admissions?
It was really via a delightful string of coincidences. I went into clinical practice, and I started becoming drawn to the administrative side of things. And within 3 or 4 years in practice, I was the chairperson for risk management and quality in the Department of Radiology, and I was a member of our board of directors. And through the process of various committee work, I came in contact with the then dean, and I got a call one day asking me out of the blue if I wanted to come and work in the admissions office. It was really a very great example of the different paths that you can take in the practice of medicine.
And when you say you work in the admissions office or even as vice dean, are you actually reviewing applications? Are you setting policy? Can you give us more insight?
I'm doing the whole shebang.
What is that you do?
Soup to nuts, I do the whole shebang. Yeah. So I have a director of admissions with whom I work very closely. I'm only half-time in the admissions office. I still have my clinical practice going. So as my husband likes to say, I have 2 full-time jobs. but it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. I set policy. I'm the final word in the admissions office. I do have a vice dean of education to whom I report, but this is my show. We set policy. We train our admissions committee, we train application screeners, we train our interviewers, we oversee 6 students who help us with the admissions process. I myself review a lion's share of the applications. We do recruiting, I manage our website, we do our marketing, you name it, I've got a hand in it.
And it sounds like you're pretty busy. But it also sounds like very creative, kind of interesting. I mean, I'm in the field. This is a part of the work that I love.
Oh, it's so much fun. It's just incredible. My skill set has expanded so broadly. We're always trying to figure out how we can do things better, how we can reach students more, how we can have broader outreach to them. It's so much fun. There's just so much more room for creativity than one may think looking at the process from the outside.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one of the changes that I'm sure you're dealing with is the new MCAT. How do you think the new MCAT is going to change medical school admissions, if at all?
I think it is going to change medical school admissions to a degree, and I think the change is going to be primarily in how our students are able to approach med school when they get here. I always talk to, when I advise candidates, and I do quite a bit of pre-health advising, I tell students not only do you want to get into med school, but you want to make sure that you're able to hit the ground running when you do get here. So the incorporation of some of the new content, particularly biochemistry, I think it's really going to give students the upper hand to just start running as soon as they get to medical school. A lot of medical schools have backed off a little bit on the amount of biochemistry, the basics of biochemistry that they teach in order to incorporate other things. The psychology, the sociology, the anthropology, sort of that liberal arts bent, I think is going to give students broader perspective. And as a research-intensive medical school, which is what Case Western Reserve is, I'm delighted, we're all delighted to have some epi-bio stats in the back pocket of our matriculating students.
That's great. Now, I mentioned in my intro that there are different groups of pre-meds calling exhibited this time of year. And we're going to try at least to have something for each of those different groups. But let's start with a group that is preparing to apply this summer. A lot of applicants want to apply early. Okay, that's, I want to apply early. Others are stressing if they submit their application on June 3rd as opposed to June 2nd. When right. MCAS begins processing applications, in your mind, what is early and what is late in terms of having a verified MCAS application? I know Case Western's official final application date is November 3rd.
So wait until deadlines is way too late. Right. Deadlines are arbitrary. We have to draw the line somewhere. If you wait until the deadline, you are probably going to be too late.
Right.
Early, the definition of earlier has changed. When I came here almost 10 years ago, the definition of early was probably shoot to have everything completed by mid-October. And as everybody took our advice, early started shifting forward. So I tell students to work backwards. Think about when you want to have your application completed. Make sure you understand the various steps and how long each step may take and work backward from there. So at this point, I advise students to try and shoot to have everything completed by mid-August. So working backwards from there, if you want to be complete by mid-August, getting your secondaries completed from the date of receipt can take people anywhere from 3 to 4 or even longer weeks. So let's use 3 weeks as sort of our arbitrary completion time. So that takes you back down to about the third week in July.
Right.
So you get your secondaries once everything is complete from AMCAS. Your fees are paid, your letters of record are in, you've designated your schools, your transcripts are verified. Transcript verification can be the most unpredictable step in the whole application process. 2 years ago, AMCAS ran into some trouble. They were 4 to 6 weeks in processing of transcripts. That really threw a monkey wrench into the completion timelines for a lot of students. This past year, they were on top of it. They really took command of it, and verification was about 2 weeks. So let's say then, for the sake of balancing it out, verification is 3 weeks. That now takes you back to the beginning of July. So the moral of my long story is I think if you can get your AMCAS application in and submitted by the end of June, you should be in good shape. No gold star for being that person, first person on the very first day.
No, it's certainly not if it means you're submitting something that's sloppy also.
Absolutely. Student, and I definitely tell students, start preparing, start thinking about it. You can start thinking about your MCAS application before it even opens in May.
Of course.
The prompts are all out there. There's a sample application. You can start thinking about your essay. You can start thinking about how you're going to fill out your experience section. In fact, when I advise freshmen and sophomores in the process, I tell them to start keeping a portfolio from day one. Keep a portfolio with all the experiences you've had. Write down some reflections about how they went, what they did. In the experiences and activities section, you need to indicate your contact person, the number of hours you spent, the dates in which you were engaged, their contact information, and a few thoughtful sentences about what you did. So keeping that portfolio, I think, from a very early stage in your process will make it all that easier when you go to apply to medical school.
That's great advice. What about, like, I am getting calls now or hearing from people in a variety of formats that, you know, I'm going to take my MCAS in July. I want to get my, and then I want to apply. Or I want to get my MCAS application early, but I'm only going to take the MCAT in July or perhaps early August. I mean, would you recommend those people wait till the following year, or do you think?
It depends. Mm-hmm. I think that if it's a July or August MCAT, you could still get in under the wire. Past mm-hmm. August with a September or October date, that's getting pretty late.
Yeah.
So for those students who take the MCAT sort of mid to late summer, I recommend you get your AMCAS in and submitted 2 to 3 weeks before you go to take your MCAT so that the transcripts can be verified while you're refocusing on your MCAT. Then you give yourself a couple days to rest, recuperate, do whatever you need to do to recover from the MCAT, and then your secondaries will start coming in. You can work on those then while you're waiting for your MCAT score to upload, and then the day your MCAT score uploads, you can be complete. So
right.
If you are an early August taker, you can be complete by early September, which if you're a strong enough candidate is not tragic. So a lot of the timelines in the applying early are very germane to students who are more in the average competitiveness or below average competitiveness. There's always that one student you see who you see their application in November who had a 44 MCAT and they were in the Peace Corps and they were a Fulbright scholar and they have a 4.0 and, you know, those few interview slots you hold back are probably going to go to that one person. But
that,
for the majority of candidates, pardon me?
That makes sense.
Yeah, so the majority of candidates who are in the average range for competitiveness, slightly above, slightly below, applying early is critical, but it can be done. For students who are in that cohort who are going to take the July to August MCAT, they really need to look at their application very honestly. Do I have a good GPA? Am I well-rounded? Am I reflective? Are my essays good? Do I think my letters are good? How are my standardized tests going? How are my tests, you know, your sample tests in preparation for the MCAT going? How do I think I'm prepared for this? And if you think that you're going to do okay, then go for it. But if your practice tests for the MCAT are not where you want them to be, it's very rare for a student to really pull it out on that final test date if the preparation steps up to that weren't very strong.
Sounds like very practical and realistic advice. Now, let's turn a little bit to the personal statement, okay? When you review an MCAS application, specifically the personal statement and the experiences, what are you looking for? Whom are you hoping to meet in that application?
We are looking forward to meet. We really want to meet a well-rounded, reflective person who is who they are. You know, candidates always say to me, describe your perfect candidate. Describe your perfect matriculant. There's no such thing. Very few, if any, medical schools want to fill their classes with cookie-cutter replicants of one another. We want to have a class of distinctive individuals who come with a variety of life experiences, a variety of perspectives, a variety of different motivations, because the reality is our students are really going to learn more from each other than they do for us. And so it's in our best interest to have a very well-rounded, diverse group of students. So when we read the personal statement, I don't mean to sound glib when I say this. I tell people, aim for a very solidly average essay. There's always the candidate who tries to have a stunning quote that opens it or a really funny anecdote or a cutesy story that isn't always well received by the screening committee. So we really want to see a student just talk about themselves, their journey, why they're applying, what they're looking forward to in their own voice. The same with the experiences. We want to see somebody who's well-rounded. Our curriculum is team-based. We have problem-based learning, so we want to make sure that students have worked collaboratively with other people. We want to just see a very strong, reflective person who doesn't have to be, you know, outside of the box, who's somewhere maybe in the box, but has done it with authenticity.
I think it's probably the key word. Now, Case Western has four, I was reviewing your website, obviously, before today's call. Case Western has four cornerstones or themes in its curriculum: research and scholarship, clinical mastery, leadership, and civic professionalism. When an applicant looks at the website and reads those themes, and you go into much more detail about those themes on the website than just rattling them off like I did, mm-hmm. What should those themes mean to an applicant in your view? I mean, is it just marketing for you, or should it be telling the applicant more?
It tells the applicant much more. It's certainly not marketing. We are looking for students who prospectively come to us with some of those leadership skills, some intellectual curiosity, i.e. research. About 89% of our students that matriculated with us last year had engaged in some type of scholarly work, very broadly defined, ranging from bench work to research in public health to anthropology. One year we admitted a woman who'd written this great senior capstone on the history of bloodletting in revolutionary France. It was hypothesis-driven.
Oh,
she used some statistical analyses. It was unbelievable. So we define scholarship in a very broad sense. So we do look for some leadership skills, some basic raw materials. We do expect our students to be interested in engaging in some research. If they haven't done research in undergrad, that's okay. What else have they done? But we have a 4-month research block dedicated of dedicated time for a student. So if a student says, I hate research, I don't want to touch it with the 10-foot pole, I'm not sure they should be going into medicine, but they probably should not be applying to us.
Right.
We have research incorporated in there to ensure we're all about exploration. We're all about the well-rounded student. We want to give them the tools they need to go in whatever clinical direction really sets them on fire. We think being able to read, interpret, and analyze the scientific literature is a very critical part to being a physician. Even if you are in private practice and you never do a research study ever, you still have to read and understand the literature in order to apply best practice. So we have the research thesis in there to make sure students are exposed to what research means in medicine and to help them understand what does a career in academic medicine look like. How do you know you don't want to have one if you've never seen it before? Outside of that, clinical mastery is something we feel very strongly about. The term clinical competence is not something that we'll accept. Nobody wants to have a doctor who's merely competent. You want to have a doctor who's a master at what they do. So we work very closely with our students to make sure they have early patient experiences. They understand the significance of what it is they've signed up to do. You're a physician. You're going to be taking care of the most vulnerable populations in the world. Let's make sure we address this and approach it with the appropriate gravitas and respect for what it calls for. Civic professionalism, our students are very involved with outreach in our local community, as well as nationally, as well as internationally. We think that our students are very fortunate to have the skills that they have, to have the academic abilities that they have, that we think it's very important to give back to the community around you, and that's how we define civic professionalism. So a lot of it is based more on what our expectations and our aspirations are for our students once they matriculate with us.
Is it fair to say that you want in the application to see that the students share these values through their experiences or through the, you know, not just what they list, but this is important to them. You're saying what's
Absolutely.
Important to you. You'd like to believe, you want to admit people who share those values.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And so they may not be as well fleshed out, the experiences, as they will be, hopefully, once they graduate from medical school. But we want to see that the interest is there and that some of the raw material is there, that they've dabbled in some of these areas. Some have done more than dabbled. Some have become almost content experts based on their experiences. But we want to see that the spirit is willing and that these are areas of interest to the students. When people say to me, how do I pick a medical school? It's analogous to some degrees in picking an undergrad. You need to go where you know it's going to set you on fire, where the school's goals line up with yours.
Right, right, absolutely. Now, you mentioned the research, the 3 or 4 months research component. You mentioned
4 months.
Early,
mm-hmm.
4 months, okay. Early clinical exposure, that obviously ties into the clinical mastery, that's what you want students to acquire. How is the leadership and civic professionalism reflected in the Case Western experience and curriculum?
We have themes of public health and service tied in through our curriculum. As I indicated, the main learning tool here, we do have lecture, but the main learning tool is team-based learning, where rather than students sitting for 40 hours a week in lecture, they're broken up into small groups of 9 to 10 students with a faculty facilitator. They learn the basic science in the clinical context. So rather than potentially getting a lecture on glycolysis in a patient with diabetes, they'll get a patient who has clinical symptoms of diabetes, who has basic laboratory values of diabetes, and they'll work through that clinically and then go backwards down through the basic sciences. It's a really interesting, very relevant way for students to learn, and it really gets them in shape to be practicing physicians. That's how we're trying to teach them, to think as a physician would think. Now, on the heels of that, it enables us to introduce a lot of different content areas into the learning process that they may not even think about until they're on the wards or their residents or attending physicians. So their patient with diabetes that just worked through could wind up to have no health insurance and has uncontrolled diabetes because they can't access their medications. Now we segue into a discussion about healthcare disparities. We examine our own attitudes. We look at varieties of different healthcare systems across the world. So we're really able to give our students a very broad view of not just clinical medicine, but the other areas in medicine, sort of socioeconomic determinants of disease that are equally germane to becoming a successful physician in this increasingly complicated medical world.
Okay, great. What is Case Western looking for in its secondary applications?
So as with virtually every school, our secondary application has questions that are of interest to us. So a lot of them have to do with self-reflection. One of them is, tell us about a personal challenge you faced and how you grew from it. There's a question about how you would deal with small group dynamic. There's even a question, is there anything that you'd want to tell us that wasn't covered anywhere else in your application? We really want to get to know our candidate. We want to give them the opportunity to let us know them. And we are all about self-reflection and progress and growth and moving forward. So all of our questions deal with those content areas, as well as an opportunity to describe any research in which they may have engaged, of course.
Now, some people say that, you know, the MCAS is the primary application. The MCAS is more important than the secondary. Other people say, well, no, the secondary is the questions that the school really cares about, so the secondary is more important. And so there's a third group of saying they're all important. What do you say?
I fall into that third group. I think every component of your application is important, and there's not one necessarily, from my view, that assumes greater significance than the other. There's a reason there's so many different facets to it, because they all give us different information points.
That makes sense. I'm in the third group, too. from your perspective as an admissions director, what is the goal of the interview?
The goal of the interview is to look for fit on both sides. I tell all candidates, by the time you make it to that interview, you've been deemed, for the most part, academically competent by sort of the screening committee of the school. So from there on out, it's looking for fit. The vast majority of students who come to us for interviews have interviews at other schools. They'll have acceptances at other schools. So the goal of the interview is for us to get to know the candidate and for the candidate to get to know us as well. As I indicated, there are certain components that are very important to us: reflection, professionalism, maturity. We don't have 40 hours of lecture a week. We don't give a syllabus to a candidate and tell them to memorize that and regurgitate it back out to pass the test. We give them tools and framework, and then they need to function as graduate students and fill in the information that they need. We groom our students to become lifelong learners. So we're looking for all of those qualities in our interviewees on the interview day. It's very important, as I indicated earlier, with team-based learning, to have good interpersonal skills, to be able to work collaboratively. We have no grades in the first 2 years at all. There's no hidden grade. There's no pass with honors. There's no pass with commendation. We have meet expectations, does not meet. If 100% of the class meets expectations, that's a beautiful thing. So we are looking for students who can focus on the process, not the product, who can work collaboratively in a team, who can focus on the greater picture of why they're in medical school than just focusing on an A.
That's great. What do you wish pre-meds understood about medical school, and specifically about Case Western Reserve, that they usually just don't get until they arrive on campus?
So in terms of the general medical pre-medical student context, I wish students would understand that it's not magic to get into med school. It's not magical. It's not mysterious. It is in their grasp. People get into medical school every day. They graduate. They become practicing physicians. It's just like any other step in your life with preparation and reflection and insight in organization. It is within their grasp. So I'd like to, if at all possible, remove some of that stress that's associated with medical school. I don't mean to belittle it and say it's not hard to get into medical school, because it is, but if you are honest with yourself about your competitiveness, it will happen. It can happen. In the context of Case Western, Cleveland gets a bad rap. I got to say, I've been here for a long time. I love Cleveland. We've got culture. We have running water, believe it or not. It's a fantastic city. The biomedical industry in Cleveland is second to none. The amount of money that's being invested in research and in industry and manufacturing is incredible. We have four incredible hospital systems here. Our medical students have world-class, cutting-edge medical school exposures. The research opportunities are amazing. Restaurants are good here. We've got great culture. We've got the Cleveland Orchestra. There's so much more to Cleveland than people think about. And it's kind of, I think maybe for some it's a deterrent to apply, but when they show up here, they're always pleasantly surprised at what a great city it is.
Okay. I want to go visit it. I haven't seen it.
Come on anytime. I'd be happy to host you.
Okay. Sounds good. If the waitlisted applicant, now we're going to switch gears. Okay. We've been talking about 2016 applicants. Now let's go to 2015 applicants or hope to be matriculants. If the waitlisted applicant wants to reapply this summer, what suggestions do you have for that person? I mean, should they proceed as if they were rejected for the 2015 matriculating class, so they don't apply late, as we discussed a minute ago? Should they wait to hear from the waitlisting schools? Do you have a recommendation?
I do. Don't wait too long. If my rule of thumb is if you have not yet been accepted by the end of May or early June, get cracking on the reapplication. But more importantly than that, a reapplicant, a student who has not yet been accepted, needs to stop and very honestly address any potential deficiencies in their application. Did I apply late? Was my GPA low? Was my MCAT low? Were my extracurriculars maybe not as well-rounded as I would have liked? Did I rush on my essay? You need to be very, very reflective. People get into medical school all the time as a reapplicant. It is nothing to be embarrassed about. It's hard to get into medical school. But when we see an applicant who is applying for the second time, we look to see what has changed since the prior application. If we see an applicant who didn't get in last year and just turned it around and reapplied quickly without really taking an honest look at their application, it signifies to us that there may be a bigger problem. So the candidate really needs to be honest. Am I in shape? Do I have deficiencies that have been rectified so that if I apply on the heels of a recently unsuccessful application, am I going to be competitive again? Or does a reapplicant really need to stop and think, ooh, I probably need to have a year go by so I can take more coursework, I can get more clinically related experiences, I can retake my MCAT? It's very important to reflect on why you may have been unsuccessful.
I couldn't agree more. What could cause someone with the GPA and MCAT scores that are in the ballpark, a competitive applicant, to be rejected?
It could be a number of things. Certainly the interview is important. We look for students who are going to be academically successful, but as I said, who are well-rounded, personable, who will be able to interact with patients and who will be able to work collaboratively with others. It could be lack of preparation for the interview. It could be lack of insight into how one interviews. If they didn't even make it to the interview stage, it could be based on essays. Maybe there was some intolerance or there was lack of reflection. Maybe it was the extracurricular activities. There wasn't the well-roundedness that we like to see. Maybe it was even a letter of recommendation.
Right. Does it ever happen that let's say there's nothing quote unquote wrong, but maybe the personal statement, like you said, I guess you said lack of self-reflection, maybe a sense that the personal statement is a little bit canned?
Absolutely, it happens. It happens. And AMCAS has these great data tables on their website where it's open to the general public where you can actually look and see what the matriculation rate was for students within a certain GPA breakdown with a certain correlative MCAT breakdown. And if you look at the top breakdown with a 3.7 and up and a 39 or a 40 and up, the matriculation rate is not even 90%. It's less than 90%.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So clearly schools are looking for more than just numbers.
Correct. And then there are a lot of people in the mid-30s where the rate is lower. Mid-30s, mid-3s, I mean, you know, again, it's competitive. They have...
It is.
You know, and they're still not getting in. Now, you had some wonderful suggestions a few minutes ago, you know, when you told people in their freshman and sophomore years, keep a portfolio, keep a log, keep a, you know, Word doc, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a great suggestion. Do you have any other insights for those, let's say, in their freshman or sophomore years of college, who know they want to become doctors, who are planning to go to med school? And they've even gotten through Orgo.
The Waterloo.
Yeah.
So the journal, I think, is very, very important. I think it's important to explore. Even if you know you want to go to medical school, I still think it's important to have explored some other areas as well. We're very influenced by suggestion as we move through our lives at every level. That's why marketing companies are so, you know, important to the American public. I think it's important to take another look at other things. Certainly do your shadowing, get your medically related experiences, but talk to people in other fields that maybe have a small amount of interest for you. Make sure that this is the step you want to take. The reality is that anybody that gets into medicine is smart enough to make more money doing something else. So make sure that this is something you really, really, really want to do. It's a fantastic field if you go into it for the right reasons. I've been in practice for, 15 years now, and I still love it. But you got to explore. You got to make sure that this is truly the right thing for you, and it's a decision that you're making with your own gut. The other thing I tell students at every level, undergrad, med school, residents, I say try and enjoy your journey. We're so focused in medicine with the next hurdle. Okay, if I can just get this A in orgo, then I can relax. Okay, if I can just get this score on the MCAT, then I can relax. Okay, if I can just get into med school, and it goes on and on and on, and the next thing you know, your life has passed you by with you marking it only by these hurdles. So try and enjoy the journey as you go along.
Right. Have a life alongside of it. That's great advice. Thank you so much. Now, any last words? I don't know if those were your last words of advice for medical school applicants. It certainly was great advice. Do you have anything more that you want to share?
I think we hit a lot of the highlights.
You certainly did. That was great.
Okay. I would just like to underscore something that I said before, that people get into med school all the time. The things that students need to keep in mind is they need to be very honest with themselves. They need to seek advice from pre-health advisors. They need to really think about what the process entails. They need to stay organized. They need to stay on top of their own timelines. They need to be realistic, but people get into med school all the time. It happens. I'm here to tell you that we matriculate a class every single year. So people do get in, so try not to be too freaked out. Just be very realistic about yourself as things are moving forward.
I think it's also important, honestly, if this is what you're intending, but I'm also noting that you're using the word people. It's not MCATs and GPAs that get in. It's not even applications that get in. It's people. And I think sometimes applicants are very hesitant to be people in their applications. And sometimes that means that, yeah, you might have made a mistake. You might have had a dip in grades at some point. There might have been some challenge that you faced and overcame, like most people have. But it's people who get into medical school.
Without a doubt. And that latter category of students whom you mentioned, we look very thoughtfully and favorably frequently on students who have had a little blemish from which they've been able to recover. Resiliency is very important. And it's important for students to have the tools they need. The time to learn resiliency is not in medical school. It's before you get here. You need to have some good coping mechanisms. And so students, I do a lot of pre-health advising, and students will say, oh, I got a C and blah, 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 or they really flagellate themselves over one little blemish. But the reality is you can recover if you do it thoughtfully. And our committee looks very carefully and well on students who are really upfront about a challenge they may have faced and how they've recovered from it and what they've learned from it, which is the genesis of our essay. Tell us about a great personal challenge you faced and what you learned from it. Resiliency is very, very important. You need to be a very well-adjusted, functional person, because it can't be separated from who you are as a physician. So you need to make sure, bitter, miserable, nasty people make physicians of that ilk. A well-adjusted, happy, reflective person makes that kind of physician.
Makes sense. Dr. Maida, this has been just wonderful, so enlightening, but I think I'm going to have to control myself and bring this to a close. Where can listeners learn more about Case Western Reserve University College of Medicine? We'll include a link in the show notes.
Visit our website, casemed.edu, and we've got all sorts of information on there. We also do occasional webinars for students. We really do try to reach a broad audience. For students who don't have pre-health advisors, we really try to do outreach. So watch out for those.
Okay, great. We'll link to it. And we'll link to it from our show notes. It'll be at info.exhibit.com/103. This is our 103rd episode. And again, we'll include the links to the Case Western site. And if there's a page that lists the webinars, we'll link to that too.
Great.
Okay. So.
All right. Thanks so much, Linda. It's been great talking with you.
Lena, thank you again so much. It's been a pleasure. Listeners, thank you too for joining us for this, again, our 103rd episode. I have a short announcement and a favor for you. First, the announcement. We are having a webinar later today, May 20th, which will be presented by Alicia McNeese-Namonkar. It's called Creating a Winning MCAS Application. If you listen to this podcast on the day it's posted, you can still sign up at reports.exhibit.com/med_school_application_webinar2, or just go to the show notes and you'll see a link there and probably a graphic telling you where to go. Or make your life easy. And like I said, just forget the long URL. Just go to info.exhibit.com/103, scroll to the bottom for the link, and you'll be able to click on it and register quite easily. If you listen to this podcast after May 20th, then you can catch the recording at the same link. And again, just go to info.exhibit.com/103. And now the favor, which you've probably heard before. If you found this show helpful, could you please leave your feedback on iTunes? It helps us get ranked more highly if there are more reviews, especially when they are 5-star reviews. And if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.